Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I don't think there's any doubt that the biggest story for Georgia football right now for the moment is what's going to happen on June 27th when five-star running back Zamir White makes his college choice between Georgia, between Ohio State, maybe Clemson's still in the mix. But the decision for White's going to come on June the 27th. And the immediate present, that's the biggest story of all for Georgia football. So I want to deal with that here for a little bit off the top of the show. And I actually want to go back in time to April when Jeremy Birmingham, an analyst that covers recruiting for landof10.com, with a specialty in Ohio State, he joined the show. Now, on that day, we talked about a number of subjects. One of the subjects we got into, though, was Zamir White, who at that time had just been on Ohio State's campus for its spring game, and Jeremy Birmingham had a chance to have sort of an eyewitness account of how Ohio State and Urban Meyer in particular treated White on that day, and the impression that Jeremy Birmingham got from watching Zamir White in Columbus with Urban Meyer and seeing how the visit unfolded, what Jeremy Birmingham said was he thought there was some real interest at the time between Zamir White and Ohio State. As a matter of fact, here's how Jeremy Birmingham said that on Dog Nation Daily back in April.
Zamir is a guy that's been on campus with Ohio State three times in the last year, three times since June, so there's obviously some real interest there, but in February, he had dropped his top four schools, and Ohio State wasn't on it. So I think they kind of felt like, hey, this is the one chance to get him up here before maybe a decision gets made to really try to stem the tide there and get back into the race with Georgia and Clemson and North Carolina. I think that they did that from what I've understood from talking to people around Ohio State. They really felt like they showed him exactly how he fits in at Ohio State.
So White had been going to Ohio State, had been visiting there a bunch, the spring game, as Jeremy said, the third time in less than a year that he'd been in Columbus. And yet when that sort of official final group came out, Ohio State kind of wasn't there. What's the disconnect then? Well, the disconnect apparently is the fact that White's mother does not want Zamir playing so far from their home in North Carolina, wants more of a driving distance type relationship, wants a spot a little closer to home. So how exactly was Urban Meyer going to navigate his mother's wishes? How exactly was Urban Meyer going to kind of deal with those concerns that the White family might have about Columbus being so far away from North Carolina and, frankly, potentially maybe even a kind of different culture? Well, here's how Jeremy Birmingham explained that back in April.
There were some questions and concerns from his family about, you know, just the lifestyle at Ohio State. It's a little bit further away than some of the SEC schools, and I think that was a potential concern, but I watched as Urban Meyer and Tony Alford, Ohio State's running backs coach, made Zamir a priority for the entire game, making sure that they were spending time with him, Urban Meyer coming over in the middle of the spring game while the play's going on the field to run over to the sideline to spend some time with Zamir and his family.
Listen, there's an element of this that almost feels a little bit confusing because you've got Jeremy Birmingham saying this on Dog Nation Daily back in April, how well the visit for Zamir White went to Columbus. Urban Meyer, even during the spring game, giving a lot of individual attention to Zamir and his family. And at the same time that Jeremy Birmingham was saying that on Dog Nation Daily, you also had a lot of other recruiting analysts saying that things were looking good between Georgia and Zamir White. What's the disconnect? Why are the people in Ohio saying one thing and the people in Georgia saying something else? Well, is it a possibility that maybe Zamir White is saying different things when he's visiting the different campuses? Here's Jeremy Birmingham on that point.
The question is whether or not they can beat Georgia out. And I've heard from previous folks that Zamir had talked on other visits and told other coaching staff that he was heading to Georgia. He did not tell that to the Ohio State staff, I can assure you.
Now, the reason why I bring this up, because Jeremy Birmingham, the guy that you just hear from there, who says that maybe when Zamir White goes to Ohio State, he's saying one thing. When he visits Georgia, he's saying something else, is because Jeremy Birmingham, the guy you just heard from, has now officially gone on the record, and he is now picking Zamir White to pick Ohio State when he makes his college decision on June the 27th. I don't have to tell you if that is true, if that becomes true, that'll be one of the all-time gut punches for Georgia, at least in recent recruiting memory. A few words that Berm wrote at landof10.com for why he made his choice, I'll read from him here. He says, obviously, that Zamir's visited Columbus three times in the last year with his mother, and here's the interesting part. Each time, the feeling has been more positive for the Buckeyes. Though most still believe Georgia will be his landing spot, I believe that White himself prefers the notion of being a Buckeye. earlier on Tuesday. This is Jeremy Birmingham once again from landof10.com. I put in a 24/7 sports crystal ball to validate my claim, and right or wrong, this one is a lot closer than some believe. Obviously, Birmingham's pick got some attention, so he wrote again at Land of 10 explaining why he made his pick. He said the rumors of Ohio State moving close with Georgia were always paired with this asterisk. White's mother, Shanee, reportedly favored Georgia, and the two have been to Athens more than they have been anywhere else by a long shot. Berm goes on to say, that information, coupled with the fact that White is committing on June 27th, his mother's birthday, was something that had to be considered as the driving force in his recruitment. Over the last few weeks, though, sources have indicated a softening stance towards Ohio State, providing a new wave of optimism on the Buckeye side of things. Ohio State head coach Urban Meyer and running backs coach Tony Alford are not going to give up the fight for White, Jeremy Birmingham says, and then concludes with this. There are multiple people close to the situation who feel Ohio State has been the team to beat for White for a while. With less than a month remaining in his pursuit, everything is moving in the right direction, he means from the Ohio State perspective. Final sentence here, a lot can change. The decision date remains a concern if his mom isn't on board with Ohio State, but I believe that's where this is heading. Once again, that's Jeremy Birmingham, landof10.com, explaining why he's picking Ohio State over Georgia for five-star running back Zamir White. And listen, you know, the bottom line for me on this entire discussion is that I obviously don't know what Zamir White's going to do on June the 27th. My gut would be that he would pick Georgia because it does seem like he's been on the Georgia campus so much, and it seems like when you are going to pick on your mom's birthday, doing what your mom wants you to do would be the sort of the best way to honor her. And I believe other people have said that Zamir White's mom favors Ohio State, or I should say that she favors the University of Georgia. However, I do think that all of us, whether we like Urban Meyer or not, and let's be honest, most of the people watching and listening to Dog Nation Daily probably don't like Urban Meyer very much, but we do have to respect the Ohio State recruiting machine. That's the reason why I bring this up on this show today, that while White may be a lean in the direction of Georgia and still more likely than not to pick the Dogs on June the 27th, I do think it's important for Georgia fans to realize that this recruitment is not over yet. But I'll restate now what I said to start the show. In the immediate present for Georgia football, there is no bigger deal than this. Now, what happens on the field in 2017, that'll matter more eventually. And how everything else takes shape in 2018 when the recruiting front, that may eventually matter more too. There's obviously more than one good player in the country. However, for right now, Georgia has a chance in the next few weeks to grab a very big player at a very important position of need. And I, for one, can't wait for June the 27th to get here. And like a lot of Georgia fans, I'll be holding my breath until the Zamir White announcement's finally made. My name's Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us on our program today, whether you be checking us out on Facebook Live. Obviously, we air at 10 a.m. each and every morning, Monday through Friday, on Facebook Live. We're also on the radio at noon every day on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. So if you're in the Athens area, you want to check us out on the radio, 960 The Ref is the place to do that. Also, obviously, in podcast form, at iTunes, at SoundCloud, DogNation.com, pretty much wherever podcasts are found, you can find Dog Nation Daily. Getting excited about the Dog Nation invasion to South Bend coming up this September. The big one there cannot get here soon enough. And, of course, the Dog Nation invasion brought to you in part by R.S. Andrews, who reminds you to keep cool this summer no matter how hot it gets with the guaranteed $99 AC tune-up. Now, you know the story here. Your AC may go out on the hottest day of the summer. That is, unless you get the folks from R.S. Andrews to give you that $99 AC tune-up. Their clean, screen, trained, and timely techs can give your system a thorough check and guarantee it all summer. Don't let it slide. Call the ones I trust, R.S. Andrews online at rsandrews.com. I'll also take a moment to remind you that we are now just 149 days away from Georgia, Florida, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party in Jacksonville this October. And we believe that a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. If you believe that too, then check out shopdognation.com. Get your Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirts. You can see these there. We got all the sizes back in stock. We love these things. We'll give you free shipping there at dognation.com, or I should say shopdognation.com. You can get your very own Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater t-shirt. Hope you enjoy Chip Towers right now, and thank you so much for being with us here today on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Always good to have Chip Towers back here on Dog Nation Daily. A lot to get into with him on the program today. And, Chip, if you don't mind, I want to start with something that you recently wrote at DogNation.com. You know I'm a fan of your Next Generation pieces. I like reading about the incoming freshmen who are going to be showing up at the University of Georgia. And the most recent that you've written is very interesting, I think, when you talk about Walter Grant. And the angle that you kind of approached on Grant is one that I think we can't talk enough about, is the fact that Grant, in so many ways, is kind of an underrated, maybe unheralded player, a guy who, you know, maybe – didn't spend as much time on the camp circuit and getting the attention the way that some recruits do. But this is a guy who had a committable offer from Alabama, which is not an easy thing to get. This is a guy who could have gone to Florida State, another major recruiting power. When you think back to Kirby Smart's biggest recruiting wins for February of 2017, I think the Walter Grant win has to rank pretty high up there. And, boy, I hope fans are aware of just how good a player Georgia got when they got this young man from Cairo.
Yeah, he's a really impressive guy, kind of to get to know and then certainly to learn about from just the, you know, the standpoint of athleticism. He can really do it all, and he did it in the relative obscurity of Cairo, Georgia. Now, people who aren't familiar with where Cairo is, that's just about as far in southwest Georgia as you possibly can get, just over the line from Tallahassee. Florida State knew all about him. They had him to their camp. He went to Georgia's camp, and he went to Alabama's camp. But other than that, you know, didn't get out and about all that much, especially with regard to the, you know, the Nike Spark combines and those kind of, you know, the opening and all that kind of stuff. He just didn't get those kind of invitations. But, you know, once you get to know Walter Grant, you realize that, you know, that's not really high priority for this guy. You know, he calls himself a country boy, and I guess he is in most respects, but he's very loyal, very happy being a syrup maker there in Cairo, and had plenty of great options at his disposal without putting out a bunch of effort with regard to that other stuff.
This is kind of off the subject a little bit, but in a previous life, I used to do some high school football play-by-play, and I did a state championship game in Cairo, Georgia one time. How much do you love that as a high school football town? Now, I know when you're interviewing Grant, it's kind of in the off-season, so you don't see it, you know, at its sort of peak, you know, in intensity for high school football. But when you think about these sort of great rural atmospheres for high school football in Georgia, Cairo, where Walter Grant comes from, has got to rank right up there, whether it be the nickname Syrup Makers, which is a fantastic one, or just a group of folks that love the game of football. Cairo is a really cool Georgia town.
It is. It's very typical of South Georgia. I mean, you know, it's you know, Friday nights in the fall, those stadiums are the center of the universe, and that's certainly the case in Cairo. And what's so cool about it is like you go 30 minutes down the road and there's another little town that feels the same way,
yeah.
And another 30 minutes and it's the same way, and that, you know, unbelievable football players have come out of those lower regions in the state of Georgia. But, you know, to be clear to your other point, you know, about Kirby Smart, he has really benefited in these first couple of years at Georgia about the relationships that he actually established as an Alabama recruiter. And that's, you know, that's when he first came across Walter Grant, was as a ninth grader. And that's because he knows those areas very well. You know, he's a Bainbridge guy. Bainbridge is the town right next to Cairo, and that's kind of his circuit as an assistant coach. He would swing through there and make those 30-minute drives on two-lane highways. He knew the coaches and the players, and that's the way you discover. I call these, you know, these little diamonds in the rough, little gems that are kind of hidden down in South Georgia. You know, Kirby Smart knows where to find them.
Well, another really cool South Georgia town that loves high school football is Kingsland St. Mary's over there on the Georgia coast. And that part of the state, they love Bryce Ramsey because he was a high school star there at Camden County. And it seems like there's an interesting development going on here with Ramsey. Sounds like Kirby Smart still recruiting him to come back to the University of Georgia for his final season. Ramsey may be having trouble finding a home where he can be a starting quarterback. What can you tell us about this right now in terms of the likelihood that Bryce Ramsey actually doesn't transfer but actually comes back to Georgia for another year?
Yeah, I would say it's at least 50-50 and maybe better weighted than that toward Georgia. And this was kind of a little bit of my concern at the outset. You know, let's be clear, Bryce Ramsey's a good guy, okay? And he loves Georgia. He really does. He's just a guy who wants to play. But one of the, you know, the things that are problematic about that graduate transfer rule that people don't think about all the time is I mean, it's not that easy to find a home. You know, there's not, you know, the best you can give anybody is 1 year, and it's very difficult to find a situation on the, you know, certainly on the Power Five conference level where that's available. But even on the lower scale, the FBS and the FCS, it's difficult to find a place where you know, okay, come in here and run us for 1 year. You know, he doesn't have a huge resume to display of what he can do. It's very limited what experience he's had in Georgia's situation. So his is a tough equation, and Kirby's giving him a good pitch. You know, Georgia needs all the depth they can possibly get at quarterback. It's like, hey, man, you're here, you love us, just hang. You know, we can put you to work for sure. And I'm sure they can find a way to get him on the field this last year for sure.
Do you think, and I'm sure that as of now, we don't know the answer because it's still a hypothetical situation, but if Ramsey did come to Georgia, would that change the equation for Jake Fromm at all? I mean, right now I think we would all view him as a 0% chance of taking a red shirt. Would Ramsey's situation potentially change that even by a degree?
No, I wouldn't anticipate it moving Jake Fromm closer to red shirt status, but, that, you know, certainly, Kirby in Destin this week is putting forth the narrative that you know, he could compete with Jake Fromm for playing time. But I think that's, you know, Jake Fromm's pretty far down the road in that regard. I mean, as it stands now, you know, we're sitting here just about to see the calendar flip to June. You know, Jake Fromm's their only other guy, and they've been getting him ready, you know, both mentally and physically to play this fall. And I think that's the future. I mean, you know what you have in Bryce Ramsey. You're still not 100% sure what you have in Jake Fromm. And the only way to know is to get him out there on the field. So I would see if Bryce came back, it would be as a firm number three, you know, as a safety net, in case, you know, disaster struck at the quarterback position. But, you know, I can't be sure what he's telling him.
A hot topic on our show the last few days has been something that an anonymous coach apparently said in Athlon Sports preseason magazine, that maybe Jacob Eason doesn't like football enough and maybe that's going to hold him back from being a great player at the college level. Do you think that's a fair criticism of Eason based on what you think you know about him?
Well, I'm actually weighing in on Eason with a Towers take that'll be posted on Dog Nation today.
Good.
And it should be up there by the time your radio listeners, I think, you know, listen to this, but, you know, I mean, look, you know, the criticism, Jacob Eason just says, I call him in this column, you know, the Rodney Dangerfield of SEC quarterbacks. I mean, he's getting no respect. And I would imagine, just knowing what I know about Jacob Eason and certainly his father, Tony Eason, is, you know, he's got a pretty strong competitive spirit. And I would imagine that he's taken all these assessments, whether they be anonymous coaches or all these rank 'em polls right now. You know, those are coming out right and left right now in quarterbacks, and you do not see Jacob Eason among the top five. In fact, a lot of guys, you know, Jarrett Stidham just showing up at Auburn is generally rated ahead of him. You know, the Bentley kid over at South Carolina, the new guy at Mississippi State. I mean, all these guys are getting higher ratings than him. And I think that Georgia, it appears to me, is doing everything possible to get Jacob Eason on the right channel. Now, his numbers speak for themselves. You know, 55% completion percentage, 120 quarterback rating, 16 TDs, 8 interceptions. Those numbers aren't great, but they're not awful either. And if you get in there and look at it closely and kind of put the magnifying glass to it, compare it to a guy named Matthew Stafford that was here just a few years ago, they're very, very similar. So the room for growth is significant with Jacob Eason, and I don't think everybody in the country was just wrong about this kid when they were recruiting him out of Lake Stevens, Washington. I just think, you know, the circumstances haven't been, you know, quite as ideal as he would have liked him to be in his first year, but he certainly has a chance to address that this season.
We're going to see a lot of social media posts in the next couple of days about some of these freshmen who were not early enrollees showing up on campus here this week. What are these first few weeks, month or so before practice starts, what's that time going to be like for these guys on campus?
Well, this is truly an acclimation period, and I think it's terrific how they do it now. I mean, it seems like this comes up every time I talk to you, Brandon, but I've been around long enough. You know, I remember staking out in front of the old McWhorter Hall, you know, when these guys would show up in August. You know, I mean, they would show up in late July, early August with their parents and I, you know, in the cars and carrying their hampers of clothes and bags of stuff into the dorm. You know, now they do that in late May, early June, and I think that's really important. I think it's really helpful. And Georgia actually put out a video yesterday that Jeff Sintel shared on Dog Nation of those guys coming in to McWhorter Hall. I think it's a terrific time. It's a terrific time of bonding, and you have an opportunity to really get these guys acclimated and ready to play. And ready to be college students. You know, they're not learning which bus to get on in August. They're figuring that out in June, you know, where their classes are and where the Rankin-Smith Center is and how to get back and forth to the football facility. These aren't small things. And so I think it's really, really important, and it's a really fun time, really exciting time for these families that, you know, I've gotten to know so well through these Next Generation stories.
Kirby Smart at the SEC spring meetings in Destin says that he supports University of Georgia's relatively strict marijuana policy, at least compared to some of the other SEC schools. Do you think that's the way that he really feels privately about that?
Well, I wouldn't hazard a guess about how Kirby feels about it privately. But, I mean, I've heard enough from other coaches in the league and just kind of chatter about it that it's an issue that hurts Georgia to some degree, both from a kind of a recruiting standpoint, and certainly from a tangible standpoint of people in violation aren't at your disposal in early games. And Georgia, you know, opens with a couple of tough ones at App State and at Notre Dame this year. You're going to be without at least two guys for that first game based on the policy. I'm sure that's annoying for these guys. Coaches, at the end of the day, they want to control everything and handle everything their own way. And I think left to their own devices, that way wouldn't be necessarily to take away, you know, playing time right away in the season. There's other ways to address it. They addressed it differently at Alabama. But, you know, Kirby Smart realizes, you know, who his employer is, who he answers to, and you're gonna toe the party line in that case. And I think, as he said, at the end of the day, it's illegal. They're very clear about this. I talked to a couple of guys at the end of spring practice about the whole policy and everything. They know what it is. They know what the risks are. And so, you know, if you're going to take those risks, then you have to live with the consequences, and they are what they are.
The other thing that Kirby Smart said yesterday that I thought was kind of interesting, and we'll finish up with this, Chip, he admitted that the first year for him in Athens was a disappointment, at least even by his own standard. And there's an element of this that you may say, well, what else is he going to say? But – you know, he could have said, hey, it's all part of the process, and we're building something, we're in a learning period, and, you know, it's step by step. You know, he could have used a bunch of cliches there. Don't you have to give him some points for some honesty admitting that, hey, based on the standard that exists at Georgia, that wasn't good enough? I mean, I felt like there was, for the fan, a somewhat positive takeaway from the fact that Kirby admitted that yesterday. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. And I had the same reaction, Brandon, when I first saw that, you know, when it said, you know, the headline, you know, Kirby Smart disappointed over first season, you know, and you want to say, well, duh, you know, I mean, weren't we all disappointed about that? But no, I do believe there's a good bit of honesty in that. And you got to think about, you know, the environment that Kirby's coming from. That, you know, he didn't lose five games in the 9 years he was there, hardly, at Alabama, so you know it was disappointing, and it's humbling, and all those kind of things. But I think just like we're talking about Jacob Eason, I think there's tremendous growth in year one to year two, regardless of what sport you're talking about or whether you're talking about a coach or a player. One to two is a big year, and I think Kirby realizes where things went wrong last season, and I think he desperately wants to make them right, and I think we'll see that.
Hey, Chip, really good stuff. We appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily. Looking forward to that Towers take on Jacob Eason coming up at DogNation.com, and we know you'll have some other great stuff coming in the days ahead as well. We'll look forward to reading it all and then, of course, talking to you again on our program again very soon.
All right, Brandon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff there from Chip Towers. Always a fun conversation with him here on DogNation.com, and I thought that his take on Jacob Eason was really interesting, and I hope you'll read his Towers take on that when he kind of expands on those thoughts a little more coming up at DogNation.com here this week. Want to transition, though, for now into our SEC Through. Of course, hope you'll join us today, 3 p.m. Eastern time for SEC Country Live on the SEC Country Facebook page. I'll talk all things SEC, including a lot of stuff involving Georgia, with my partner Mike Johnson, the former Alabama All-American. It's 3 p.m. Eastern time every Monday through Thursday there on SEC Country Live. And speaking of schedules for your viewing appointments, CBS kind of releasing some of its TV schedule for the upcoming season. It's always kind of a time sort of to get excited about the year when you start actually seeing some of the television dates and games and times for some of this kind of stuff. And CBS doesn't give you the whole thing. Some of this kind of stuff will be chosen during the actual week, but they give you a few of the games. TCU at Arkansas going to start the CBS year. Tennessee at Florida on September the 16th. Of course, the traditional cocktail party matchup against Florida for Georgia on October the 28th. And then the Friday game on November 24th, the day after Thanksgiving, for Missouri and Arkansas. Those are the CBS games we know right now. Few interesting things about some of these games. First of all, the TCU at Arkansas game, that might not necessarily get your attention right away, other than the fact that Arkansas is a pretty big underdog at home in that game to a TCU. I would think that Arkansas right now is the conversation for maybe among the worst teams in the SEC. But aside from that, the other interesting thing about that game is, remember, that'll be Brad Nessler's debut as CBS play-by-play announcer. Vern Lundquist obviously retired at the end of last season. Nessler, who I think was a great hire for CBS. Nessler, also a good friend of us here on Dog Nation Daily. He's going to take over in that play-by-play role for CBS this year, and I think that's a good pickup for CBS. Be fun to see him there in that spot. Obviously, Tennessee at Florida is that game you sort of think about being on CBS. For a million years back in the 90s, that was the game that CBS always started its coverage with for the season. They didn't televise games the first couple weeks because back then they had the U.S. Open contract, the tennis tournament, I mean. But now they obviously televise from the very beginning of the year. But Tennessee-Florida just seems like CBS, what you expect to see that game on. And, of course, this year that could have interesting implications in the SEC East. One of the reasons, by the way, that I do not favor the Georgia-Florida game ever moving out of Jacksonville is because that Jacksonville locale seems to be one of the reasons why that Georgia-Florida gets that CBS 330 date each and every year. The fact that you can pencil that in each and every season is, I think, one of the special things about that rivalry. It's one of the reasons why I'm in favor of the game staying there in Jacksonville. So good to see that populate the CBS schedule once again. I guess the only time in recent memory that it hasn't been the CBS 330, you have to go back to, what, 2002, when it was a night game. And I know that was a wild, wild environment that year. Of course, Georgia lost the game. But something about Georgia-Florida at night was, I think, you know, kind of problematic for the powers that be. I think it's pretty much been 330 every other year since then. And, of course, the Missouri-Arkansas game, we'll see what that game means when it's actually played. A couple other stories I want to get to for you here in the SEC Through. But it was interesting that Texas A&M's athletic director goes on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday, like a lot of people are doing speaking at these SEC spring meetings, and essentially put a lot of pressure on Kevin Sumlin to win right now, basically saying that Sumlin knows that he's got to do it. And, you know, this is not necessarily news in that it's unexpected, but it is interesting that the AD here gives voice to, you know, the real pressure that's on Sumlin to win this year. Now, I do think that Texas A&M has a chance to be one of the surprise teams in the SEC this season. It would not surprise me to see them jump up as high as, like, say, number 3 in the SEC West. I'll take them on their over-under in terms of season win totals. I think they have a chance to be in the top 25 rankings at a certain point this season. But if they don't, Sumlin could lose his job. We've had actually a good bit of stability in the SEC in recent years. I think that 2017 may be the time when that kind of stability ends and the continuity that's existed for a few of these coaches. You may have a few SEC teams looking for coaches this offseason, depending on how things go. Saw where Nick Saban's still complaining about the Maurice Smith rule, the so-called, you know, ability for Smith to transfer from Alabama last year to Georgia. And I guess there's some talk. I know that Barrett Salee, a friend of mine, college football writer, had this on Twitter that maybe there's some bad blood right now between Alabama and Georgia. And if there is, I say good. And if Saban's upset because Georgia got Maurice Smith last year, I say good also. Now, Smith didn't lead Georgia to an SEC East crown or anything like that, but I think it was an important stand for Kirby Smart to take with his career. You got to let people know that you don't work for Alabama anymore. And frankly, one of the things that sort of bothers people about Greg McGarrity, the Georgia athletic director, sometimes is it sort of seems like he works for everybody but Georgia. Kirby Smart keeps job number one, number one. He defends Georgia, got Maurice Smith. I think it was a good idea. We'll make that your SEC through. All right, so as we wrap up the show today, I want to go back to something that Chip Towers was talking about just a moment ago, and that's Bryce Ramsey coming back. And, you know, if he does come back, I think that's good for Georgia. I mean, it's almost like taking your own transfer player in. And even if Ramsey never plays, there's just something about having a little more depth at the quarterback position that's just kind of valuable, right? And I do think, even though I agree with Chip that it probably wouldn't impact Jake Fromm's redshirt status, that he's probably still going to likely play here in 2017, I do think it at least gives Kirby Smart a choice. Because the worst-case scenario has always been, what if Georgia's not winning enough games by a large enough margin that you can get from significant playing time in the year in which you burn his red shirt? And what if Jacob Eason's not playing in such a way that caused him to lose the quarterback job? Well, the presence of Bryce Ramsey may sort of keep that worst-case scenario from happening, which for Georgia I think would be a good thing. We'll see you tomorrow.